you'll find that these vehicles emit even sometimes more than twice the original settings because of the poor maintenance. So you find that we need this data. The data is used also in the training for these mechanics to understand what they need to do to make such and such a change. And then also for the lawmakers to understand how bad this issue is, how big it is, and the urgency that we need. Because Uganda was one of the first countries in Africa to commit to reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. But when you look at the interventions, transport emissions are not that much accounted for because we don't have the data.
Hi, Smart Community friends, and welcome to the second Mobility March episode. In this episode of the Smart Community podcast, I have a brilliant conversation with Michael Wanyama. Michael and I met briefly at the Smart City World Expo in Barcelona in November of 2022, where his company, Auto Safety Uganda, won the innovation category of the World Smart City Award. In this episode, Michael and I discuss his background in IT and automotive technology and why he is so passionate about happy, healthy, and inclusive communities. Michael tells us about the context in Kampala, Uganda, why it's the best tourist destination in Africa, and also about some of the challenges Uganda faces with traffic safety, vehicle reliability, and air pollution due to a lack of systems, skills, infrastructure, and regulation. We talk about the many different areas of the community that transport impacts and the importance of supporting the community in the process of transitions to new and cleaner mobility options. Michael tells us about the projects they've been working on, including upskilling mechanics, promoting gender inclusivity in the automotive industry, and collecting data to support policy change in Uganda. We also discuss the problem of African nations having to copy and paste solutions from other countries, but finding they don't work in the African context. We finish our chat discussing the emerging trend of great ideas and policies being stymied by the lack of resources and skill sets to implement the changes, as well as the need for community engagement, leadership, and education to work together to solve these problems. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Michael. Welcome to the Smart Community Podcast. How are you today?
Hi, Zoe. I'm feeling great. And actually, it's a good morning. It's about 5 a.m. in Kampala. So it's a quiet. Actually, I feel like this is the right time because no background noise at all. So yeah, I feel great.
That's awesome. Thanks so much for getting up early and joining us today. Excited just to get into this conversation. So let's just jump in. Can you tell us about your background and what you're passionate about?
My background, initially, I started as a mechanic, a vehicle mechanic, some time back. And then I also had a passion for IT, information technology. So I have a double face. But then it's after doing IT that I went and did some like real life training in automotive technology. And so I'm also doing some little studies in public health. So I want to combine like my experience that at least we can bring to our communities. Tailored services, because you will find that there are some gaps that we could kind of address with our own experience. So basically, my background is in IT and automotive technology.
Awesome. These days, bringing those two things together would be quite, I don't want to say unusual, but it's not typically common that those things come together. However, we know when we move into the future, they'll most likely go, hand in hand as we get more and more technology in our vehicles and our mobility devices and how things run and work and things like that. So, it's really interesting. Well, tell us what you're passionate about.
I'm really passionate about seeing people happy. I'm a parent. I have all three intelligent sons. Actually, my eldest son did what to call the primary living examinations, and he passed in grade one, which was really, really amazing. So as a parent, I want to see a future where my children are living healthy, getting basic services without a hassle, like where I see a community where there's inclusiveness for everyone. So that's what I'm passionate about. And it's one of the things we are trying to see that we see in Africa, because we have different settings due to environmental infrastructure and political challenges. You find that some of these things are hard to come by unless we join hands as communities.
Yeah, I think that's really, I guess, like it goes hand in hand with what you're trying to do, and we'll get into that soon. But it's really about what smart communities are, is having those, building those communities for our, you know, the next generations that then, yeah, can be inclusive and have those basic services. Just to give people a little context, can you tell us where you're joining us from today? And yeah, tell us a little bit about where you're from and I guess how you have kind of fallen into this smart, not fallen in, you've come into this smart city space, but tell us where you're from originally.
From Kampala, Uganda. I don't know if you've been to Africa. Uganda is it's on the eastern part of Africa. It's a landlocked country. We are mostly, Kampala is the country's central business district. Yeah, so that's where I am. It's where most of our program activities are happening. Yes. And actually, I can tell you that just a little bit. Uganda, I think, is the best tourist destination in Africa. When you get a chance, you should come and visit. We have the weather, everything is so we just need to fix a few things here and there. But yeah, it's really, really, really amazing down here.
Yeah, no, amazing. No, I would love to come and visit. We'll have to work that out. We'll have to do a podcast on location. Sounds like a good plan. And we actually saw you on stage in Barcelona. We'll get into that. I'll forget otherwise. So let's first go broad and then we'll talk about a bit more about why you're in Barcelona and what you were doing there. But tell us what a smart community means to you.
To me, a smart community may not have the same definition as you. For us, we still have a lot of challenges to go through to go smart. But what a smart community is to me is a community where every member of the society or the member of the community has the right to live without being feeling the effects of things that are being done by other people who have the resources and all that. So a community where everybody is living freely, they access the services freely, they have basic education, they get the education they need, they get the health services and any other necessities someone would need in community, they wouldn't have to go through a hassle to get them. So that's what I consider a smart community. And a community where everyone can look out for another, where they have access to information that concerns them. For instance, we have to have access to information about the weather. Because for Uganda, it's a country that is almost entirely built on agriculture. We want to have our farmers have information about how they can improve productivity, but from their own understanding. So that's what I consider a smart community.
Yeah, I think a key point there is that information, so we can make better decisions, and whether that is a farmer on their land and they integate all of the things that they know with this new kind of information or this information that they have, but then also being able to access the tools available and things like the internet and that other information and those type of things, and how can that work together rather than it being done to them. It's actually helping them and then enriching their lives so then they can be able to live that quality of life and access all those services. I think that's really important. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go to why you've won a lot of awards, actually, lots of things happening, but let's talk about Barcelona. So we were both at the Barcelona Smart City World Expo, November last year. So tell us a little bit about why you were there and the award that you took away.
First of all, I was there representing my organization that I lead. It's called Wanyama Auto Safety Initiatives. And we submitted to the call for proposals of initiatives that are making difference in communities all over the world. We made a submission, and attending Barcelona, I did attend as a finalist. I didn't know what would happen there. So I was just happy to be there as if, like, having our project called Auto Safety Uganda selected as a finalist. What we are doing, this project does, it takes a community-based bottom-up approach to making sure our communities are aware of the issues that disturb us the most. And these include the high rate of pollution within the urban areas, where some of the people that are suffering the most have nothing to do with the creation of emissions. And these include the children, the and other vulnerable groups. And then also the rampant road carnage and crashes. For instance, just in the festive season alone, Uganda police released a report where over 200 people died in road crashes. So you find that the interventions in place, yes, they seem to do something, but there are gaps. So what we are doing is that a community standpoint, because we focus on the informal sector, and yet you find that over 75% of the businesses, whether transport-related or from other areas, are working in the informal sector, which is highly unregulated. So we are taking a three-stream approach to raising awareness to communities about some of these issues and building their capacity for mitigation as individuals or communities, and as well as collecting related data that we can use to inform policy so that we can cause related and essential policy and regulatory reforms. So it turned out that our project, when you look at the African settings, because so many people in the world are so kind of excited about the new trends, the new mobility, because we are more inclined to transport, even though we touch other areas, are working with partners, but we're inclined to transport. So as many people are excited about the new mobility, which is very good, but you find that some of the systems that are working in both countries cannot be implemented and work right away in our countries. So we are taking kind of small steps so that we can integrate with the new mobility. For example, due to infrastructure challenges, if you give this country, Uganda, maybe even like, I don't know how many years, but it's really, really difficult to transition overnight or in a few years, because actually it is a worry that more of the vehicles that are being expelled from developed countries due to and they are no highly polluting and reliable. Most of them are shipped into Africa. Africa is importing over 90% used vehicles. For example, if a recall happens on a particular car brand and model, they recall them back to fix the faults. But when they have already been shipped in Africa, I've not seen that happen. It's not being shipped back for not to fix. So you find that these problems that we have with some of these automobiles, or transport equipment is worse. The problems are worse than they would be in exporting countries. And also the regulations, the systems in place make all these things. So this is the thing that these are some of the issues that we're working on within our program as we embrace the new mobility trends. For example, we are working on a project to retrofit some of the highly polluting vehicles, mostly those in public transportation, to electric, because the cost of ownership of a new vehicle for the common Ugandan is really, really unreachable, unaffordable. So you find that many of them are relying on what they have to fend for their families. For example, someone has a taxi, someone has a truck for goods transportation, but they cannot afford to go for electric, even if they are the law comes that you should transition to electric. So we want to create a circular economy around what they already have so that they can transition to cleaner mobility with what they already have at a fraction of the cost. So this is what the unique part about our our program, and that's how we got to win the World Smart City Award in the innovation category. Actually, it's just about the innovativeness of the program that we won the award. That's why I was at Barcelona.
Mm, that's so interesting. Thanks for sharing, you know, a little bit about the project and I guess, yeah, in that innovation category as well. And I guess what I really like is you're taking, you know, this really kind of big complex problem, community-based, bottom-up approach, and just like, you know, those small steps, because you know that, like you said, we're not just going to, you're not allowed to own, you know, diesel cars or petrol cars anymore. That's not going to work. We know that there's a whole range of systems and processes that are already happening, but you now then are just, you know, chipping away at it so then you can change over time. And like you said, we don't know how many years this is going to take, but it's shifting towards the right direction. I guess for people that might not know a lot about, like, I guess, you know, the mobility and I think, like, thinking about some of those other issues that Uganda might face or African countries might face, I'm just really curious to hear from you. You know, we're talking about creating policy change and all that type of stuff as well. What are some of the other things that you're really focusing on? And I guess, what is the community telling you that's really, like, important to start, you know, shifting the dial on as well?
One of the issues, I think just about everyone in the world knows about climate change. We have been facing effects of climate change, floods. You know, the change in the weather, the farmers, many of them are crying, the change, like many of them, like the seasons are not the same seasons they used to be, like maybe 10 or so years ago. So climate change is a real threat. And when you look at our Africa or Uganda, it turns out local transportation is the largest driver of air pollution, of which air pollution is and climate change like have the same causes. So if we can reduce the air pollution, then means we can also, it's a step up like in the fight against climate change. So we are trying to see that our communities can access clean air. Actually, in this, we are partnering with Uganda's main university, it's called Makerere University. They have a project on air quality monitoring. So we are using data that is generated by the university to reach out to communities. People are being taught how to access the available air quality data in their localities, and how they can, through their activities, reduce on the pollution. Because just besides the ecological effects, even the health, public health, from recent records, it shows that Uganda was losing about 1,000 people to air pollution related illnesses. And the people that are suffering the most are those that are in urban poor communities. There are so many aggravating factors that are driving air pollution, but transport being the largest, and that's where our expertise lies the most. And actually, one of our main activities is building the capacity of the local technical workforce. For instance, you find that I mentioned earlier about Africa importing used vehicles. Now, these vehicles, when they're here, they run on poor road infrastructure. And then to make what matters worse, they get the worst maintenance. Most of the mechanics that work on these vehicles, like over 85% of them, never had any kind of education in their lines of business. And they learn in a war of apprenticeship, and like in garages, motor garages. And when you find that as technological advancements have been happening in the automotive sector, their knowledge stays stagnant. And you find that many of them cannot do proper diagnosis. They don't have the tools, they don't have the skills, and even the knowledge. So this is also a major area that needs a close attention. So we are partnering with the university and also the Uganda's Ministry of Works and Transport. They joined us recently, so that at least these people can be upskilled and then also get certified in their according to their competence, so that at least they can learn best practices around automobile maintenance. And this also improves their own livelihood because they get skills so that would help them to and data. And another thing to note is that we have another like idea within the program of helping the women, young women. There are so many of them that are interested in this business of the automotive repairs, but due to the environment, they, you know, the small of a male-dominated business. So you find that some of them find it hard to blend in, working with the men. Others get bullied, others not. Can be abused. So it's quite inconveniencing. So through the program, we are helping to support them skillfully and how to, for them to find placement, like how, because we believe women have, they usually have special abilities they bring to any kind of sector. Uganda's president has really shown us that, because actually when you look at the cabinet right now, most of them, many of them are women. Women are taking up many leadership positions, and we believe like in every other sector, when there's a gender balance, it makes a difference. And that also contributes to, you know, a more inclusive and smart community. So our work really surrounds like areas to do with transportation, even though we look at other areas in a way of reducing the reliance on fossil fuels. When you find that some factories, there are some homes where they have diesel generators, and you find hotels with those very old like systems that where there is no form of emission control, and this happens to the same as vehicles. So what we are doing is to make sure that whichever device or whichever equipment that runs on fuel has to have a way of abating the emissions, at least making the emissions low, so that we improve engine efficiency, and then make sure that whichever kind of mechanism is in there to counter the pollutants has its integrity enhanced and maintained. And usually you find that the same mechanics who are working on vehicles are the same mechanics who work on generators and other related equipment. So we have a wide vision, but you find that being a startup nonprofit, taking on big challenges, it's, you know, we have to go bit by bit so that we can make impact. And then we're also seeking for partnerships. So the more partners we get, that's the better we can bring service to the community. I hope I'm not veering off the topic.
No. I love it. Thanks so much for sharing that. It really goes to show how much, you know, when we talk about mobility, because it's my specialty, my background as well, and how many different areas it touches. Like, you know, you're using transport as, you know, that key focus, mobility as a key focus, but then you're I guess, affecting change in the like the gender balance, or, you know, the workforce, the skill sets. You know, we know that we need data to be able to do that. We want to reduce emissions. And then, like, just linking the people working on the vehicles are also the people working on the generators. So what other, you know, how can that then spread across? And it just goes to show again how integrated our communities are. But being, yeah, you have that focus to start with, but then as you can grow and build, you know how many other areas it's affecting as well, which is just, you know, the amazing thing about when you start kind of, you know, you've got that awareness, and then you get your focus, and then you start actioning, how many other little, not little, huge things, how many things then come together to be able to kind of filter out into that fabric of that smart community like you were talking about. I love what you're doing. It's really amazing. And I think just taking that bit by bit approach, but yeah, having that really big impact. And then, like you said, over time, the impact's just going to ripple out more and more and more, because the young girls that then have those skills that then can teach other people, that then can, you know, maybe they're in the parliament or wherever they happen to be, they're bringing more income to their households. That's what really then shifts and changes people's quality of life. But it has to be, I guess, like from the ground up, like you were talking about, that community base. And I think that's really important as well, because, you know, we know that, you know, you could come in and do something to someone in a community, but it actually needs to come from within, and then people, you know, get on board and bring all those things in. But also from a data and technology perspective, we know we've got this stuff at our fingertips now that we can bring in. And but again, thinking about that community approach, how will they use that technology? Who's going to use it? what skills do they need to be able to use it and maintain it? So that's, you know, the vehicles, but then also this new technology that maybe we're bringing in and data sources as well. Maybe we need to collect new data. Maybe the data's available, we just need to be able to visualize it more effectively. There's so many different things. And I think starting at that community base then allows you to kind of branch off into all these different areas. Yeah, and bring partners on.
Absolutely. Speaking of data collection, that's also another part of the program. We are just preparing this. I think by the end of this quarter, we'll have studied. But we are partnering with local garages that do repairs, so that we can do collection, like we do tests of emissions before the repairs and then test afterwards. Or at least we can create a rationale for what an effective repair can do. Because when you come to our local market, you'll find that like over 60% of repair parts and service consumables, but many of them are counterfeit, and these have potential to increase the emissions. And the fact that the country currently doesn't have developed countries usually have those annual tests for vehicles now, like roadworthiness tests. We don't have that. It was introduced like in 2017, and then it's stalled. Up now, it's not working. So we want to give our leaderships no reason to work fast on these, because we don't have data. For instance, when you look up for emissions data for a particular vehicle, let's say that was made in like 20 years ago, you will have those manufacturer kind of data sets. But when these vehicles come here, it's different. Since the regulations are not working well, the enforcement is not efficient, you'll find that these vehicles emit even sometimes more than twice the original settings because of the poor maintenance that don't. So you find that we need this data. The data is used also in the training for these mechanics to understand what they need to do to make such and such a change. And then also for the lawmakers to understand how bad the issue is, how big it is, and the urgency that we need. Because Uganda was one of the first countries in Africa to submit to commit to reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. But when you look at the interventions, transport emissions are not that much accounted for because we don't have the data. I happened to interface with some officials from the UN environment, and somebody told me that Africa's share of global transport emission is near negligible, of which I would not, because there's data for that, but because we do not have enough data to quantify what is already coming out of us, we have to base on that. So we are trying to put up an argument for people to see that yes, there is emissions, but it's much more than what the estimates share. So that's also another area of our program where we need to make data available to communities, data available to the policymakers to take appropriate actions and in time.
Yeah, that's so important. And often sometimes in terms of enacting change in policy and things like that, you know, that we don't talk about what data we do and don't have, and that if it's underrepresented, then it's harder to then, you know, enact that change if we can't measure the impact or the results. Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah, and I think it all goes hand in hand as well. Again, it's that other kind of, you know, once you start here, you've got this web of things or a tree of things that are kind of affected by it. It just keeps spreading on and on. So I'm hoping, yeah, you can definitely get some partners on board to help you really continue to impact that change. Or I guess create change and then create that impact as it, you know, ripples out into everything you do. I'm keen to talk about the future now, if you'll come with me. And I guess staying on this same theme, what do you think the future trends are that people aren't talking about enough?
In our communities?
Yeah.
Actually, there is plenty that is not being talked about yet because we have... I just started this program like about a couple of years ago. Yes, there are other interventions in the area of climate change, the interventions like improving waste management and all that. But what we are doing, there is not much talks about it. Like everybody wants to do tree planting, you know, to combat climate change, which is good. But then again, we have a root cause that is not being addressed. So you find that now, recently, the president made an announcement and he made a directive that we need to, due to high costs of fuel, fuel prices have, in the past few months, it has been really difficult because, you know, prices have been going up and up. So the president was like, to curb this issue of high fuel prices, then we need to go electric instead of having to use fossil fuel powered vehicles. We need to go electric. But yes, even though he gave a directive, like I said earlier, this is not something that is going to happen overnight. So everybody is like trying to talk about how do these electric vehicles work. For instance, we have a couple of companies, I think, that have electric motorcycles. They've started building them. But the challenge is, since we don't have proper charging infrastructure, you find that someone is just confined within the city center, like where they can, because we use the system we use right now is for battery swapping. You swap a battery, like you drive about 70, 80 kilometers, then you'll have to swap it with a charged one. So you find that many people finding it hard to embrace this unless we find a way of improving the infrastructure. We have there's another government-supported company that is building buses, but you find that still the infrastructure is not supporting transition to, you know, electric. So, yeah, many people are aware of the issues we have. We need to improve our transportation. We need to improve how we consume. We need to improve how we do production. All these are known issues, but sometimes we lack the environment does not really support like shifting right away. So that's why we are devising means of taking baby steps to, and improve, because what works out there, there's a challenge of African nations having to kind of copy and paste, policies from developed countries to ours, especially for the colonial masters. So you find that what works in the UK hardly works in Uganda. And even though some of these would work, many of them are slow-moving solutions. So we need some that are tailor-made for our own settings to be able to bring about change. That's why the area, because you find that the people we are trying to educate, many of them, their literacy levels are very low to kind of adapt to the new systems. But if we take them step by step, for instance, when we are approaching communities, we don't just stage trainings. We start with what we call focus group discussions. We go through the community leadership and the young people. We usually are focused on ages 18 to 35. So the young people are mobilized and we do have these discussions. First of all, to appreciate what they already know about, how transportation does pollute and and even safety, in the area of safety, how their works are affecting safety in transportation. So then we also get to understand their challenges and concerns. Many of them, when you ask of their concerns, many of them say the government is not taking care of them. They are not, you find some of them decry the high taxes on the items they use for their jobs, for their works. So we get to collect all this information, and then it helps us to design training workshops tailored, meant to bring about quick change within their skill sets. So the talks are there. People are aware of the changes we need to make, but not everybody knows about this. That's why we need to reach as many communities as possible so that we bring out, because first of all, lack of awareness. For instance, when it comes to motor driving or motoring, it's really hard to find someone who knows what they call eco-friendly driving. For instance, I've seen in developed countries where they have set up low emission zones, to protect the population from high emissions out of the vehicles. But and right here, we have campaigns that against smoking, against plastic pollution and all that, but we don't have any campaigns against, because we do have a lot of excessive idling within our driving habits. And this is partly due to the poor mechanical conditions of the vehicles. We have seen vehicles in public transportation, like it has to, the engine has to run until it gets to the destination. Sometimes if you kill the engine along the way, it may fail to start. Sometimes you may not even have a wall like pushing. So you find that the conditions do not allow for eco-friendly driving. And then also the lack of knowledge, because most people do not know, understand, and most people in Africa don't understand the fact that a vehicle engine that is idling emits more than one that is engaged running. And then also we have myths, some myths that we are trying to kind of bust. But some people say that a diesel engine, for it to work at, you know, efficiently, it has to never be a kind of stopped along the way. So when you go to, let's say, a bus park, you want to travel east or west of the country, you'll find, actually, when you enter the bus park, you can literally smell carbon monoxide, because remember, most of these vehicles don't have any emission control. So the toxicity of the gases, you'll smell them. And then the gas, the bus is going to be idling throughout the time of people boarding until it goes. Wherever, when they are gridlocks, it is going to stay idling. So we are trying to reach out to the companies managing some of these transporting businesses so that we can get to their drivers and educate them about this, how they can save money and fuel when they improve their driving habits. So it's quite a lot to do, but you find that most people are really aware of the issues we have. They just don't know how to go about them. And that's the gap we are trying to solve.
Mm. No, thanks so much for sharing that. It's so, it's again, just showing those small steps that we can take, and that education and information, you know, and that we know what the issues are, but sometimes, we just need that bit of extra education, bit of extra awareness, bit of somebody to come and say, this is important and I can help you to solve it together, to then enact that change again. Now, I want to go back a little bit, because you talk a lot about safety. And so obviously we've got that public health element, having reliable vehicles. Is there any other things that you focus on in terms of, you know, vehicle safety and you know, reducing those accidents?
Yes. Like I said, we're still a startup, but on the list of our objectives is improving safety of our people on the roads, especially children. For instance, when you look at the accident reports, crash reports in the past few years, many children have been killed on the roads, and most of these have been school children. We are having a small campaign where we are hoping to muster up some resources and scale it. It has to do with improving motorist and pedestrian communication. Just something simple. We are going to be approaching schools. We did a small kind of a test, like on how it would work, and it was responsive, though we did not have enough resources to scale it. So the way it works is that we approach the schools to teach the children, those in primary schools, to learn to communicate, because we have in my car, and another one that we have in our project, that we have dash cams. Well, set this dash cams with high quality video. At first, we did a small study, and we would drive around in the morning before 8 a.m., and then around midday, and then around 5 p.m., you'd find so many kids along the roads. A kid would stay at a particular spot for over 10 minutes just waiting for someone to give them a chance to cross the road. And because most motorists are kind of absent-minded, actually, when you go through the roads, you're going to find like about six or seven seven motorists driving while on their phones. Many people are driving so distracted. And the more sophisticated these gadgets become, that's the bigger the risk. The bigger they become, the bigger the risk. So you find that they don't care that much. A kid can stay by the roadside waiting to be given a chance to cross for over 10 minutes. So what we are trying to do is put out a campaign that helps the motorists identify kids that want to cross, and then for the kids to learn how to signal to the motorists, like just something like it's smiling and waving. So the motorists would be moving, let's say around midday, knowing that, like, watching out for any waving kid. So they'll know that now this kid wants to cross, and they'll give them wet food. Then also, the kids will know that when I wave and smile, they will know that I want to cross the road. You know, there are, the infrastructure is there. You find there are zebra crossing, but still, people, because of the, you know, the distracted driving, many of them don't care that much. So we have footage of this, evidence of this, of how it has been happening. And we are trying to approach both parties, the public transportation companies and the school, so that we cause this kind of communication spark between the pedestrians, mostly children, and the motorists. So that's an area that we are trying to work on to improve safety. And then also to make sure that these vehicles, because the way emission control systems are compromised by the technicians, it's in the same way the safety systems are compromised. For instance, if somebody installs a bull bar, you know, bull bars on the vehicles. So if somebody installs a bull bar on a small car, as small as a Toyota Yaris or something related, yet the systems that are supposed to trigger airbags within the frontal part, you'll find that in case of a crash, the airbags won't deploy. So it's like this bull bar is just protecting the car body, not the occupant, and not even the people in the roads, because in case someone is hit, somebody who would maybe get a minor injury, usually it's worse. So we try to get people to understand the, at least for them to learn to drive better, other than having to protect their bumpers from, you know, being crushed or something like that. And then another thing, you find that the technicians, because they don't have the tools or sometimes the knowledge to do something, they modify key components that are meant to enhance safety of vehicles. We have seen ABS systems bypassed. You find that the ABS pump, when it gets faulty, sometimes when they cannot replace it, the mechanic would go for kits that would bypass the pump so that at least the car can brake at once. Yet it is designed, the ABS is supposed to aid a sequential or simultaneous braking. So you find that these systems are compromised by the technicians, and this has highly contributed to the crashes. And when you look at the accident reports, it's usually the motorist that is blamed. There has been on social media a video that has been trending on LinkedIn and everywhere else, YouTube, about a taxi that, you know, just in a junction, it came speeding and, you know, it crashed into motorcyclists and other vehicles. These are common accidents, very common accidents in our city. But you find that the counterfeit parts that are being used for or in repairs and maintenance have a lot to do with the crashes that are happening. So we are trying to reach out to connect with related agencies in government, because as a small nonprofit, we cannot do much change. But if we can work with the related agency to bring about it, like we have, Uganda has what we call the Uganda National Bureau of Standards. They regulate the quality of what's brought on the market. What is being produced or what is being imported. So you find that some critical parts like brake systems and other things that are supposed to make a vehicle safe while moving kind of, you know, compromised. Poor quality is being used by these technicians sometimes because they are easy to access. But if the presence of these parts on the market is regulated, then means these technicians and also being trained, they learn what works best. And then also if the presence of these counterfeit parts is regulated, it can improve the situation to in addition to what is being done. Because you find that most programs or projects that are trying to improve safety on the roads are inclined on advocacy, you know, and policy. So others are post-crash care. So what we are trying to do is to prevent the crashes, at least to make our vehicles safer. Though one challenge you have found is that some of the resources available for road safety, you find that many of them are inclined to the other part, which is advocacy and policy. So the ones that are within our line are hard to come by. So, but we are trying our best to say that at least, because literally we could be just one of the very few that are looking at this for at that at road safety from this angle and also the reduction of emissions. But we believe with the traction we've gotten some visibility, the awards we've won, and also the local kind of partnerships we are making, I see progress just in a matter of 2 years, 2-3 years. We've done a lot with very limited visibility, limited resources.
Resources, yeah. But then, yeah, again, just building that visibility and awareness of what you're doing and then bringing a more part, all those type of things. And no, thanks so much for sharing that, Michael. It's been, I've enjoyed this whole conversation. Just, yeah, getting me to think a bit differently as well, like as I, you know, I work in the mobility space, but it just reminded me again of like how complex and how many different things need to fit together and that we can make incremental change in our smart communities. Now, one more question, how can people connect with you?
We have, we can be connected through social media. We have, someone can search for Auto Safety Uganda on Twitter or LinkedIn. My name, Michael Wanyama, can be found on both platforms. We have Facebook too, but the fact that the Facebook of, I think since the past 3 years, since 2020, it has been kind of blocked in the country. So many people have to access that through through VPN and all that. So we're not very active on that. And then also our website, we have a website, www.autosafety/ug.org. Someone can always go there and see more about our activities. We can also be found at our location in Kampala. So we are out there.
You're out there being found. We'll put all the links in the show notes so people can click away and find you, maybe come visit. You know, I'll put that on my agenda to come visit.
Actually, we would really, really love to have some visits for some, you know, anyone who is interested to come and see what we are doing down. We would want to have some, you know, people join us in the communities. Actually, one of the things we wish for, there are so many companies out there that are doing transportation research. We would be happy to partner with them for them to understand how transport works in the informal sector within Africa. We would enhance their transport research with our data that we have. So it would be great to have, you know, people come to join us and visit us. Check us out on more social media platforms and all that. So it's great.
Thank you. Thanks, Michael. Yeah, it's again been fabulous to have you on the podcast. Looking forward to our next conversation. We'll say goodbye for now. Have a great day. Talk soon. Bye.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Are you looking for an engaging speaker, MC, or facilitator for your next big event? Then we've got you covered. Zoe is a go-to speaker, MC, and conversation facilitator with a difference. She's a master at simplifying the complex and making connections you might never see. Book Zoe for your next event. Email hello@mysmart.community or head over to her speaker page, www.mysmart.community/speaking.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with 2 M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.